It's Marketplace Tech for March 9th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. When you start to make travel plans, where do you head? Expedia, Travelocity, Kayak, maybe the local travel agent's office? Everybody's got a go-to. Many of those options are actually powered by Google's data. And today, the company has announced it's officially getting into the game as well with a consumer-facing product called Destinations by Google. It's rolling out on mobile devices first. You put in a search like traveling to Asia, and Destinations by Google will cull through its mountain of data to find the best times of year to travel, good flight deals, etc. Why is the company doing this? Here's Derek Coatney, a manager working on the project, speaking at a busy rollout event here in Manhattan this week.
And so we've noticed that a lot of users spend a lot of time and a lot of searches trying to make travel decisions. And so we thought that we could pull together an experience that answered a lot of the questions into a not only an engaging but also an informative view.
So the next time you're hoping that everything will come up Milhouse,
spring break!
You'll have another option, and other companies already in the game now have some competition. Worth noting that a similar service for finding insurance called Google Compare has struggled. It's shutting down in a few weeks. Good news. Marketplace Tech is headed back to South by Southwest this year. We are focusing on the interactive part of the massive conference in Austin, Texas, but the education part has already started, and Marketplace Senior Education Correspondent Amy Scott is there. We called her up to talk about a new teachers and tech survey that was unveiled this week at South by Southwest EDU. Amy, what do we learn here about how much tech teachers are using in the classroom these days?
Well, most of them are using some form of technology. The digital education company Tez Global surveyed almost 1,000 teachers around the country. The vast majority are using devices and apps and the web in their teaching. There are still gaps. About 27% said that they didn't have enough computers and tablets in the classroom. But just 16% said internet connectivity is a barrier to effectively using technology, compared to 35% of teachers who said that in 2015, just last year. Here is Tez Global CEO Rob Grimshaw.
That's crucially important because, you know, from a practical point of view, if you can't get access to the web properly in the classroom, then everything starts to fall to pieces as soon as you try and bring technology into a lesson. And of course, it undermines teachers' confidence in technology.
So efforts to bring more schools online and close some of those gaps in connectivity seem to be making a difference.
Okay, so how are teachers using all this technology?
70% are using it to communicate with parents. But one thing that was really striking to me is that about 73% say they use open resources, that is free online materials, more often than they use textbooks. So teachers are sharing a lot.
All right, Amy, we are headed to South by later this week. What are the themes you're seeing at South by Southwest EDU?
This is much more of a kind of the do-gooder conference. I would say you'd see more bow ties, fewer hoodies. Actually, I don't think I've seen a single bow tie yet, but it's really, you know, a gathering of education policy folks, data scientists, educators, and of course, entrepreneurs taking on some of the big topics in education. And then, of course, there are lots of people selling the next big solution. Investment in learning technology companies hit a record $6.5 billion last year. So this stuff is big business as well.
Marketplace's Amy Scott, thanks. Last year, a new hotel near the city of Nagasaki in the southwesternmost tip of Japan opened up. What makes it unique? It's billed as being run almost entirely by robots. Gideon Lewis Kraus checked in recently and wrote about his experience for Wired magazine. Gideon, tell me about the experience of going into the Henna Hotel.
I got there after 24 hours of travel. It was about 11 o'clock at night. I had a very difficult time finding the robot hotel, and I finally found it, and I walked in, and it had been very humid and hot outside, and the doors kind of whispered open, and inside it was very cool and very quiet. And first there was this big pink stuffed robot thing that looked sort of like an upside-down turnip, and that said hello to me. And then I went to check in. And first there was this kind of like miniature toy robot that did not appear to be functional or doing anything but blinking at me. And then in the middle row, there was like this android of a young Japanese woman in a white tunic, but there was a sign that said she only spoke Japanese. So I was directed toward the third berth, which was a velociraptor with a neck beard and a bellhop cap. And he kind of growled at me, and I moved forward to check in.
What struck you about your experience staying in this hotel?
Well, it seemed to me to be a somewhat classic case of the use of technology to obscure some of the other economic problems there, or obscure the economic issues, rather. So the place advertises itself as being really totally state-of-the-art, but in effect, like, the robots aren't doing that much more than, you know, touchscreens could be doing. So in this case, the robots really are there as a kind of cosmetic thing and as a PR thing to mask the fact that this is just a series of pretty radical cost-cutting measures.
Gideon, I know you've spent a lot of time in Japan, and you write about this Japanese concept of superior service. Is this something you think robots can deliver?
Well, it's hard to say, because the Japanese idea of superior service has a lot to do in Japan with the idea that a host is able to anticipate a guest's needs. You know, it's hard to imagine, but that element of anticipation seems like it involves, you know, such low-frequency human signaling that it's hard to imagine a robot doing that in a satisfactory way in the near future.
Gideon Lewis Krause is a contributor to Wired Magazine and visited the robot-run hotel in Japan. Gideon, thank you very much.
Oh, wow. Thanks so much.
If you want to read Gideon's piece about the Henna Hotel, you can head to facebook.com/marketplacetech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.